now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So Johnny May is very concerned about the political situation in North Korea.
I think he's only right to be.
Yeah.
I think it's terrible.
No. Well, you can join him because
they shot a general by tying him to a cannon. That's terrible.
Johnny May's been talking to Ben Teo about this, about his concerns.
Yeah.
And he's persuading him in their summer off, they're going to go there and free the nation. They're going to liberate North Korea.
It's the only country where Ben Teo hasn't played as well.
Hello and welcome to week two of The Ruck, the new Six Nations rugby podcast brought to you from The Times and Sunday Times that we intend to bring to you with the spine-tingling drama of an Owen Farrell collision with Louis Picamoles, with the heady excitement of a Scotland who just can't believe they're going to win on day one of the championship, and we hope with slightly more assurance than Angus Gardner, the Australian referee. I'm Owen Slott, the Times chief rugby correspondent. And I'm joined by Stephen Jones, Sunday Times rugby correspondent. Morning, Steve.
Morning. That intro is a bit over the top, but carry on.
Was it? I thought it was quite a smart little start, actually, for your support.
No, it's all right.
Alex Lowe, the Times rugby correspondent.
Good morning.
Alex is brought to us today, sponsored by Southern Rail. That's why if you're getting this podcast, you might have got it about 15 minutes late. Well done for getting here.
Thank you.
And you're fit this week.
Yes, my five-a-side teammates might disagree, but yeah, fully fit, thank you.
Ankle better?
Yeah.
Right, so if Johnny Sexton could show the kind of bounce-back ability of you, then maybe Ireland could win a game. What a weekend, what a start. That was as good as anyone would have hoped for. I would have thought I went away feeling, from Twickenham, feeling pretty thrilled by the whole affair. I didn't think the Wales game was that bad either. Steve, what were your sort of opening impressions?
Oh, it's brilliant. I mean, it's lovely when you spend all the time looking forward to the Six Nations and actually it delivers. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, sometimes out of every three games you might get one decent one. Well, I just thought we got two and a half excellent games. I thought Scotland and Ireland was a tremendous game. The sustained pace of it and the drama and no one knew who was going to win till the very end, etc. That was marvellous. And for Scotland to win their first game, I just think that kind of restored the balance of the Six Nations. It's a kind of six-legged stool, and if one of the legs is not working, it kind of totters. I thought that was marvellous. England-France, again, I just thought it was much better than some people thought. Wales-Italy, second half was okay, but I thought that was palpably the slowest and the least technically accomplished of the three.
I think sometimes we sit there stroking our chins a bit too much, like Kiwi spectators, sort of adjudicating on the sort of the high quality of the rugby that we see. But for me, the mark of certainly the first two games was sometimes the rugby was of a high quality, but what it was consistently dramatic and the contests were on a knife edge for in both games right to the end.
Yeah, you're right, and the storyline or the narrative up at Murrayfield was compelling the whole way through. And at Twickenham, you had England not starting brilliantly for the second game in a row, but the way that they dug in and found a way to win is almost becoming the story of the evolution of this England team, that they are in a position with leaders on the field who can make decisions and change the course of matches where previous England teams have had to look to the stands for that direction. So there have been, and certainly in those two games, some compelling narratives, some magnificent performances, some incredible intensity, and some real attacking intent, which has set the tournament up brilliantly.
Yeah. I thought, you're right. I think there were two things about England's victory. First of all, I used to hate it in the Lancaster era when they lose these big games and they come up and say, well, actually, we're on our way. We can go back and work on it. We've got some work-ons. You know, we almost scored and that could have been different. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how brilliant you play, and actually, it doesn't matter how badly you play if you win. You win the game, the run continues, the pressure's off, onwards to the next one. The only slight converse side of that is, in the first 60, when France were going really well, you thought, God, Vahamina, Maestri, you guys, are you still going to be there at the end? because, my God, you know, they made me look like Olga Corbett, some of them. And do you remember Olga Corbett, Louis?
No.
Oh, explain, God. Explain.
Olga Corbett was a magnificent Olympic athlete and the darling of the Olympics. Very, very small, fit and charismatic, unlike Vahamina and Maestriou and none of those things. But they did not last the course. And it just reminds you, you know, one of the bad things about players going over to France to play in their club rugby is they come back looking like the elephant man in body, not head.
Well, that's what's...
And those guys didn't last the course. But apart from that, sorry, Owen, apart from that, really a win of real merit.
That's what I thought was interesting, man of the match, Louis Picamoles. And Eddie Jones said that in the week, didn't he? He said... Picamoles will have come here and he'll have been 50%, 15% fitter. Now, where Eddie Jones gets his numbers on fitness from is a standing joke amongst anyone who's heard his stats barrage. But Picamoles comes here and he was the standout player on the pitch, wasn't he? And quite probably, if he hadn't spent the last 5 months in Northampton, he wouldn't have been.
Yes, he was. And in fact, there's an argument for who he could easily have been the standout player of the whole weekend, actually. Stuart Hogg was brilliant for Scotland. I thought one of the things that really struck me watching Louis Picamoles on Saturday was how he drove France with him in that first hour. He carried them on his shoulders, and England missed that heavy duty ball carrier. They missed Billy Vunipola, who does the same for them. Nathan Hughes has done that for Wasps, but he just didn't see, he carried a lot, but he just didn't seem to take England with him in the way that Billy can. And that I thought that's what England were missing in that hour, which Picamoles really gave to France.
Yeah, Steve, you don't rate the Vunipolas, do you?
I don't know. The only debate about those two is which is going to be the greater player, because Mako was always, in terms of the ability, a little bit far behind. My God, Mako has been magnificent this season. Not only is he scrummaging better, he's been all over the field. He's been, I mean, when he played for Saracens in Toulon in the away leg, he was absolutely indescribably good. So, you know, as without those two, it's another reason to applaud the England victory.
Eddie Jones said yesterday that Mako is on course to play for England in this tournament, which is big news for them, because we often look down at the All Blacks and Dane Coles and the skills of the front row that the All Black forwards have. As you said, that game in Toulon and a lot of the games that the Saracens have played, Mako Vunipola has every ounce of skill that those All Blacks have.
Okay, right. Listen, just to charge through the weekend, should we each go through one or two highlights of what we saw or our rugby weeks, if you like. So I'll kick us off. Already mentioned it. Really, the thing that. The image that sticks in my mind from the England France game is that moment when Owen Farrell stood up to that in that tackle to Louis Picamoles. Only about 30 seconds earlier that Spedding had sort of mowed over Owen Farrell, which is not the sort of thing that brings a smile to his face. And I just thought that was wonderful. You thought that is a player I'm going to see on the deck in a minute, and he's not going to get up, but he just clung to him, held him up. I thought that was absolutely wonderful, shuddering moment.
I had that at the top of my list as well, actually.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, great minds. I just think it just epitomised, we have spoken about that kind of determination and dog and fight that England had, and I think Owen epitomises that, and that moment summed it all up, that he stood up to their biggest ball carrier and literally stopped him in his tracks, got support around him, and England won the turnover from it, and it was a massive collision and a massive moment. Mm. But there were plenty of others. I thought the Alex Dunbar try.
That's lovely, wasn't it?
The Scotland score, where the centre popped up in the middle of the line-out, bemused the Irish line-out defence, which is quite an important thing to do, because the line-out leader is there to spot all those small details, and obviously they didn't see it. They chucked it in there, and it was a smart little try.
That was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen, because when you realise it's the opposition, there's all backs there, why wouldn't you put your jumpers up, because you're going to win the ball? It was absolutely bizarre. My favourite memory is off the field. Let me have a personal moment, because on Friday I went to interview and spend time with Keith Jarrett, my all-time favourite player, the most talented player I've ever seen, the fastest, the longest goal kicker I've ever seen. That was wonderful, because he's had three strokes in his 20s, and as he said when I came in, he said, I can't believe I'm still here, and which was really, you know, he's just a great, great guy. I really liked speaking to him. The other thing was a complete disaster, because at just after half time in the Super Bowl. I thought, this is all done and dusted, and went to bed. And when I got up, I thought, why is the other quarterback up there with the trophy? So that was a shambles. Rugby-wise, one well-refereed game, the first one. Second and third, awful refereeing of the scrum by both officials. You mentioned the Australian. Didn't have a clue. He kept on giving indirect short-arm penalties because he didn't know what the heck was happening, which was frightening.
I've got one more. My car journey from home to Penny Hill Park is the perfect time for a Desert Island Disc download. Listened to Nigel Owens yesterday. Have you heard that, Steve?
Yes, I have, yeah.
I mean, quite a lot of what he said we've probably all heard before in interviews or what have you, but I just found that I found it a lovely listen and a very emotional listen, and he talks so well. He obviously has a lovely lyrical voice, and not only did he talk about the challenges he faced coming to terms with his sexual orientation and his suicide attempt, I also loved him talking about his life in Wales, growing up in Wales and the village community, and I was just giggling to myself when he was talking about how his dad, whether his dad could drive him to his first major game as a ref, because he'd never driven more than 2 miles out of the village and never been on a dual carriageway before. I mean, I just thought that was lovely.
Yeah, and it's his story. He's a brave man who's told his story a lot, and I think what you have to remember is every time he tells it, it's a painful experience for him. It's a compelling and emotional listen, but he does it because he's willing to do that, because if it can help one person, then he feels it's worthwhile, and it's a very moving and entertaining listen at the same time.
I know I'm just slightly going off Six Nations, though. That's a great memory, and I loved it as well. But what slightly concerns me is, and again, this is not on the Six Nations, but Nigel Owens and Gareth Thomas came out very publicly, followed by Sam Stanley, and as you know, revealing their orientation. Thought they were warmly received in the game. Very, very surprised that not more people haven't, because, you know, no one appeared to have a problem with it. And you suspect there some people are still hanging on and probably being self-tortured by knowledge. So let's hope more people do, because I think rugby's a sport that's really warm to every sort of orientation in any field of life.
That's certainly one thing that Nigel said, wasn't it? That when he did confront it publicly, the warmth with which it was accepted, it didn't seem to be challenged at all.
I hate people who are late, but I don't mind anything else, honestly.
As a way of going through the games, let's nominate collectively a team of the week, who we thought the superstars were, our top 15 from the first weekend of the Six Nations. I'd suggest let's go from 15 down. I'll start us off with, I don't know, it's probably won't have much of an argument here.
Yes, we will.
Stick your neck
out. Oh, go on then. I'm going to stick my neck out with Stuart Hogg and at 15. And Alex is going to agree with me, and Stephen.
No, I'm not. Well, I mean, not downgrading his performance at all. He's absolutely superb attacking player. But Rob Conley is the man for me. I just think that having been on 117 Lions tours, we all know that the All Blacks are going to kick every ball up in the air, and they're going to try and nail the guy who's underneath it. And I think Carney, who's a big guy, is more suited to that. I'm not saying that it makes him a brilliant player in the Six Nations, but I just thought Carney was excellent and physical and looked like he was back on his game.
I actually thought you were going to challenge with Scott Spedding, in fact, because I thought he was quite tasty as well.
Spedding was, but I agree with Rob Carney was immense. And actually, his game this season, he was incredible against the All Blacks in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he's taken his game on another level.
Yeah. I don't think we're not going to beat New Zealand by brilliant one-off attacking rugby from deep, I don't think. But there we go.
Do you want to go next, Alex? 14?
Well, 14. I think I've picked two left wings, actually.
Okay,
but
on
the wings, I had Vakatawa from France and Elliot Daly, who, if you talk in a Lions squad context, is just the perfect tourist in my view. Someone who can cover three positions with great certainty, kicks long goals, has magnificent pace, intelligence, good hands. I thought he had a really good game for England.
I'm almost with you. I've got Daly, and I just think you got the wrong name of the Fijian. You just spelled it wrong. I went with Naketaki. Vakatawa I thought was good, but they were kicking behind him the whole time. Mm. He seemed to sort of lose his position defensively.
I think you've got the correct Fijian. Naitaki, I like him more and more. And also, unlike the other guy, he plays 15 quite often. The other guy doesn't. Elliot Daly, I'm almost kind of refused to choose him because when you've got a guy who's a brilliant distributor, can make breaks, he's a great kicker at goal and out of hand, and he's got all that, you think, well, why on earth is he on the wing? And I have to say that Eddie's very loyal to his subjects and the guys he picks every week. There must come a time when you're looking at Elliot Daly and Jonathan Joseph, good player though he is, and saying who should be the outside centre, not who should be on the wing.
I thought it was interesting when they did make a change that it was Joseph who went off and Daly who went to 13.
Yeah, I think that was. But I'd stick with Daly because you have to have him somewhere. And God, he just contributed in every area.
Can we not put Daly at 13? Looking at my team for the weekend, the 13 I thought was one of the hardest spots to fill. There was no one sort of jumped out at me.
I'd be happy with that.
I went with Alex with Dunbar, largely because of that entertaining try that we talked about. But I didn't think anyone really stood out in that position.
I thought Dunbar had an excellent game, actually. But no, I thought in terms of centre play, at long last, Scott Williams played really well for Wales at 12.
Yeah, I liked him, yeah.
But again, Jonathan Davis, question mark about his form. So let's not go on to that. But inside centre for me was Scott Williams, and outside centre, probably, we could go Daly, but it's a bit odd because he didn't play there. So you might go somewhere like Ringrose, who wasn't perfect but played well, I thought.
Do you want to do the halfbacks, Alex?
Yeah, well, I'd have Owen Farrell at 12, just
right,
because I thought he was very good for England. And I think Finn Russell probably at fly half for me. Sam Davis made an impact for Wales coming on the second half, but I thought Finn Russell of all the tens on show was probably the standout. And at scrum half, Baptiste Sarah for me, or Greg Laidlaw, but probably Sarah, because I felt that one of the big mistakes France made was taking him off. Things seemed to go wrong for them when he went off.
I've gone all French in my halfback, so I agree with you. Taking him off was wrong. I thought Lopez was the best international game I've seen from him. I thought he obviously kicked well, which was a question mark, and I thought he commanded better than previously. I thought he was terrific.
Do you know, Lopez, I've never rated the bloke. It was the best game I've ever seen him have. But they always used to start him instead of Brock James at Clermont, and that was always so wrong. But it was his best game. But I just like Finn Russell. He's got this sort of, you know, after the game when he's a bit G'd up, he sort of comes across like a sort of Glasgow hooligan. I'm not saying he is one, but he comes across as stroppy. He's up there with a bandage on his head, which may or may not be covering an injury. I absolutely love the guy. There's been so many Scotland fly halves you'd always like to introduce to your grandmother, but with him you'd be a bit worried if you took him round. Scrum half, Eduardo Gori. I think that the bloke to play so well for Italy in such a rather poor team just spoke volumes for him, so I just couldn't have put a wording for an Italian there.
Every week there's going to be a Lions undercurrent to the Six Nations. On Greg Laidlaw, there's a lot of scrum halves mentioned, Conor Murray and Ben Youngs and who should go, Reece Webb. What about Laidlaw?
That's a very good question, because again, I think Greg, who I love and is very much revered at Gloucester, I don't think he's actually that rapid in getting the ball away. But I just thought he played really well on Saturday. Again, the best game I've seen for ages, certainly in contention. But I think there are goal kickers on the Lions too, so I think you've got to judge him as if, you know, take away his goal kick and say, is he good enough for a nine? Certainly stated the case. I don't think it's anything. I don't think it's decisive yet. But a couple more like that, he should be there.
I don't think he should be on the plane if you're taking three nines. I wouldn't put him above Murray and Youngs and Reece Webb. I think Gloucester didn't fight to keep him this next season. He's going to Clermont. They didn't struggle. They didn't scrap to keep him because they've got a couple of good nines coming through. Greg Laidlaw's box kicking isn't. They're going to want a box kick against the All Blacks, and he can't put it on the sixpence. And as you say, his distribution doesn't match the others. So for me, he's not a contender in that respect. But it was brilliant and spirited, and he led that Scotland side fantastically. So
which is I think is one of the qualities that might make him catch the eye of Warren Gatland, because in forging a squad,
you think he likes character and resilience
and midweek teams and I don't know. I think he's got a I don't think he'll go, but I think he's got a probably a stronger argument than a lot of people seem to give him.
I got a big question mark against Ben Youngs in those three as well, but let's carry on.
My front row is I've got some two Irish props, McGrath and Furlong, and the French captain Girardeau in between them. Again, I thought Hooker was not a position where we go that someone really stood out and grabbed it. But I thought Girardeau was the best of the lot. Tight header. I thought Furlong was good. But again, not a lot of competition. When Wales changed their front row, then it got a lot better, didn't it? The Welsh front row at the starting was appalling.
Mm. I've picked the same three. Jack McGrath, who I think is had a really big game. Tau Furlong has had an incredible season. And you're right about the Hooker. There weren't any outstanding candidates. Girardeau would get my call there. I thought Xander Fagerson. So the Ireland scrum was on top, and Xander Fagerson struggled early, but he's a young prop with real promise, I think.
Well, I'll start with him because I'm going to leave out Furlong. I admire him. If I love him to bits, I'm sure he'll be the Lions' tight head. Just the sort of players coming through, and you look at McGrath and Furlong, their involvement in that game, and then you compare it with the two Welsh props who started, where you didn't see them at all. Wales looked way off the pace there, but I think Fagerson, the youngest bloke in any team in this tournament, battered in the first few scrums, stayed on till the end, and I thought that guy rose massively, in my opinion. Mm. I think in a year's time, Alex, he's going to be way up there. So Jack McGrath, I love as well. Girardeau, I think, is fantastic. How patient he was with the referee. but I think this, or Big Xander, you know, I think Scotland have got one there.
Mm. I think that was one day to speak the different language to the referee, wasn't it? The Twickenham on Saturday.
Well, yeah.
He was talking a different language to them. Well, there's some humour in there somewhere, anyway.
Yeah. We all know that referees, they must be able to speak the language of all the teams who are playing in a game. Otherwise, it's grossly unfair. Mm.
Steve, who are your locks?
Locks, many candidates, actually. I actually thought Courtney Laws, who's not played as well as he can, stood up pretty well with Cruz not there. Devon Toner, I'm slightly warming to after never rating him. Slightly warming to him. But listen, I'm going to be a big Scottish softie here and have both greys.
The train is now approaching Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, Road Station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I thought Johnny Gray keeps on having great stats. which is fine. Richie Gray keeps on appearing in games, which is also fine. So I'm going to be a big soft Scot and have the two Grays.
Yeah, me too. That's what I've got them both. I thought, I mean, Johnny Gray, 27, 28 tackles. And Richie Gray, who is less consistent than his brother, or seems to make less consistent impacts on in a game than his brother. He comes out in and out of games. I thought when Toulouse lost at Wasps the other week, he was in and out too much. But I thought they were both excellent. I thought Courtney Laws stood up to try to take on some of the ball carrying that England miss and tried to play a bit of a leadership role there. He's lost the line-out calling. But I'd go with the two Grays.
See, I thought I was controversial by not having Alan Wynne in my team, but you both ignored him completely. I had Johnny Gray, and I just wanted someone else. I've got Pickham, Aldridge, everyone. Will. I wanted someone else from the French pack because somehow the French pack were just phenomenal for an hour anyway. So I got some Vaha Mahina in there, just with an asterisk. He's got to come off after 55 minutes when he needs a cup of tea.
Back rows?
Sam Warburton. At sixth, they had a good game.
I've got Sam in there.
I'm going to refuse to play. I'm going to refuse to play Sam at six. Sam is a seven. Sam is a great seven, and he deserved the right to lose his job at seven out on the field in the Six Nations, not for Wales to play this Tipperick trick on themselves. I think Sam's a great player, and I would refuse to have him at six. If you won't let me have him at seven, I'm not going to have him at six because I don't think six should be anywhere near his back.
Do you not think that he did a job at six that was very similar to what Robshaw was doing for the whole of the last year with England, apart from he carried better and more than Robshaw?
Well, he's a better player for a start, but I mean, look, let me put it this way. The Welsh back row against England, if everybody's fit, should be Moriarty 6, Faletau 8, who's been missed cruelly, and Sam Warburton 7. As simple as that. Full stop.
Jeez, on the sevens, I've got Tipperick at seven. I thought he covered every blade. I thought he was the link man for every move when it went well. He turned over a bit of ball. I thought that he was the player that people have talked about that, given the chance, came and delivered.
Oh, go on, I changed my mind then.
I thought Hamish Watson had a good game for Scotland and Kevin Gordon, if that's how you pronounce it, for France.
He's picking up a lot of friends, Gordon, isn't he?
Yeah.
Can't pronounce his name.
Yeah, Stuart Barnes and Ben Kay, both big fans of his. And he was influential. He was involved in their try.
Hang on then, so Barnes is a big fan of his.
Yeah.
We might have to have a rethink.
He's not allowed
a rethink
team then.
Rethink there, yeah. Okay, all right.
You got Sam as seven, haven't you?
Sam seven,
right? And presumably we all have Pickhamals as our eight.
Okay. I just think that Parise has got to have a mention in dispatches. Low Pickhamall would be mine. Yeah.
Saturday morning, we all woke up to the great excitement of a world exclusive on the Times front page of the Times Sport, but by a certain Alex Lowe, George Ford to move to Leicester, and Freddie Burns going the other way to Bath. I thought that was a brilliant story, and this is something that football talk about a bit. When there's a big story of a player on the day of a game or something, does it make an effect on, does it impact him? Do you think that had any impact on George Ford's sort of okay performance on Saturday?
Well, if it did, then he shouldn't have been starting his England fly half. I mean, it wouldn't have been news to him that he's moving to Leicester, and the fact that it's been an ongoing saga for.
But he does hate it being talked about publicly, as both you and I well know, Alex.
He does hate it. He had a release clause that was activated in the middle of the November internationals, and then it looks like he's going to complete this move to Leicester.
It's the right move, Steve, don't you think? If you were George, I said he should stay at Bath, but obviously he's not going to do that.
You might think this is an old school view. All the people I revere in club rugby, there's a bloke called David Waters who played something like 740 times for Newport and had international sides. I don't think club rugby should ever get into the stage of the football thing where, hang on, we better move now because the agent hasn't earned any money from him for two. I mean, not saying that's why George Ford moved, but that's why footballers move. I'm a real fan of George and Mike as well. I thought did an underrated job, but I don't like people moving around like that. If George thought that tactically or technically there was something there that wasn't for him, that's one thing. But I don't buy the family thing. It's easy for me to say. I'm really disappointed he's going, but I still wish him well and wish Leicester well. Because in terms of signings, it's the first good signing they made at fly half since about 1833.
His father leaving has obviously affected him quite deeply, because there was a very strong argument, as you wrote, Owen, for him to stay at Bath, because the coaching there is very good. They're a team.
It's got everything around him to become the player he wants to become.
But. I think on the money side of things, there were much bigger offers on the table at other clubs. Sale were...
So he could have earned $200,000 more a year at Sale.
Yeah, and I believe other clubs as well. I mean, Northampton were in for him, Gloucester were in for him, all clubs who are going to spend money. Gloucester are already spending big money on unproven players, so they'd have spent big money on George Ford. So he's not gone for money.
Northampton can't sign a 10. They're trying for months now, haven't they?
Yeah.
They can't get anyone to go there.
The thing is, with Ford as well, you know, say he stayed at Bath, and look, I'm sorry, I'm not knocking the guy at all, but blood's thicker than water. Say he stayed at Bath, he'd be going into a team that by next year will be pretty well set and know what they're doing. When he's at Leicester, he cannot just sit there and wait for things to happen. He himself, personally, has to dictate the new style, the new tempo, and the new team. So there's no hiding place. From game one, he's going to have to lead Leicester around the field by the nose. It's a big job.
I think there's a feeling that he's also looking forward to going back to playing alongside Ben Youngs every week. I think they feel they're good friends off the field. I think they feel they get the best out of each other on it too. So actually, that style they could dictate together.
If you think you're going to presumably get a fit Matt Tamua playing at 12 outside, then that's quite tasty, isn't it?
That is true. I'm sorry, I don't buy the friends thing a lot either. Oh, I mean, positionally, maybe. Look, if you only sat with your friends, and none of us would be here.
No, I'm not saying he's gone because they're friends, but it was an aside. On the field, they feel they get the best out of each other,
sure.
Which is a factor in him choosing Leicester over anyone else.
Okay.
Other news is, it's kind of hard to bring Six Nations team news because people will listen to this after the team's been announced, but I think we can go with Jack Nowell's latest Lego creation, which he revealed yesterday. He's doing a new boat project, which has a nice helicopter at the front and can convert into a deep sea digger. Mm. So that's major.
I got one of those.
Have you?
Yeah.
How long does it take you?
Poof, blimey, it's a long time. It's okay now, but 2 weeks.
Full of admiration.
Yeah.
We can say one thing. According to Eddie Jones, that James Haskell isn't fit enough to start yet.
We can say that.
So he will be on the bench. He's had an important role. He addressed the squad on Monday about what it takes to win at the Millennium, or the Principality, having won there twice and lost there four times.
Can I just go back to that Cardiff thing you just said? Eddie came out last week and said we must not be frightened about playing at Millennium Stadium. He then did it the day after that, and the day after that. So ensuring anyone who wasn't frightened at the time will now be completely petrified, because the people who'd never even thought about it will now be thinking, God, we've got to go to the, Principality Stadium.
Well, I just wonder if he every time he says that in public, he's going back to the team and laughing about it and saying, oh, they all think we're scared about Cardiff, but you boys aren't you? So, I don't know, the Eddie's psychology, sometimes he tries too hard to work on that, I think.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
The other very, very, very significant item of news for the week was from Johannesburg on Monday morning, the news that Joost van der Westhuizen, the former Springbok scrum half, passed away, age 45. We all saw him play. He was one of the first players that when I started reporting, that I just thought was absolutely magnificent. As a personality, he was kind of hard to... He kept himself to himself, and I don't know if I ever knew a player with such self-belief as he did. As he had, he was one of the all time greats, wasn't he?
Well, I would say yes. I mean, Gareth Edwards, what a scrum half he was. But of all the scrum halves who I've seen, either live or on television, Joost van der Westhuizen was head and shoulders above any others. I admired so much his that confidence. Is when he's one of those players, when he's on your team, you just relished someone with that bravado. As an opponent, he was a nightmare for anyone to play against. Just incredible physique, great athleticism, wonderful skills. There had not been many to challenge that position, I don't think, since Furu Dupree was a fine scrum half for South Africa. But Van der Vest is an incredible player, and then as he talked about the sort of the second challenge of his life to be an inspiration for millions as he tried to raise money for motor neurone disease.
Yeah, I think that of the two, you're talking purely rugby terms now. I think Fury was the better player. Eustwood, a magnificent athlete, as Alex said. Obviously, your South African friends would say he's also a controversial figure. But what is in no doubt at all is the awful savagery of motor neurone disease, the fact that he chose not to be helpless in the face of it, but to take it on at every turn. And what a magnificent battle that he fought.
So there's some games coming up this weekend. We'll talk about them. I think two of them are belters. First game is Italy-Ireland. Can anyone really see Ireland failing to win a game they should win twice in a row? Joe Schmidt will just be fuming after last weekend. They should never have done that. They won't lose to Italy, will they?
No, they won't. It's not the time to play Ireland either, especially where from the day we're talking today, it looks like Parisi may not make it. Mm. So I think Connor will have a good 3 or 4 days with the team. He was quite right in complaining about the referee.
And
totally right. I mean, the way that the ref spoke to both teams was markedly different. But, I mean, I would say now if you offered Italy 40, they might take it.
Especially if they haven't got Parise, who could quite easily in, I don't know, 5 of the last 10 years been my World Player of the Year. I mean, he's just phenomenal. And if he's not on the field, then any small chance is a zero chance for me.
Exactly, exactly.
That Conor O'Shea positivity graph is he'll never do it, will it? He's always proud of the boys.
Yeah.
The Cardiff clash that we just mentioned, Wales, England. Obviously, two teams that won. I just think that's just a cracking contest. England, I don't think they should make changes apart from I would bring in James Haskell. But as Alex mentioned, they won't do because they don't think he's quite fit enough.
Well, they say they won't do. I'm not necessarily sure.
By the time you hear this podcast, he'll be starting in every position.
Well, Ellie said on Monday that he's not fit enough to start by Friday morning.
Mm. Steve, Sam Davis or Dan Bigger at 10?
Absolutely no doubt whatsoever. You think all week about playing the youngster, then you play Dan Bigger. Absolutely no. Dan Bigger is not been on great form. He's a big game player. He was the dominant figure when Wales in the World Cup campaign, where they're actually rather unlucky because they had 47 centres out. Dan Bigger will be there on Saturday, no question whatsoever.
Even though when Wales started playing well, it was because they had Sam in there instead.
They did have him, but the thing is, you've got to be careful with this replacements thing, as at Twickenham. Games change in the last 20 minutes. Is it the people who come on, or did the game change anyway? Did it open up? And I'm afraid that, you know, the tough part is the first 60. That's when you want your big match player. I've got a lot of time for Dan Bigger. I think he'd be a lion. He's far more durable than Johnny Sexton, and I think that Dan will be an important lion.
Can you see Wales winning that? I mean, I asked that question as if it would be a great surprise if they did. I still think England have got too much. I think Wales are a team that's in transition too much still to be ready for the challenge of England.
I think there's the big thing that we don't know is Wales, basically, because we know that England will almost certainly improve and play really well. I don't think they'll have any problem with the stadium. Wales have got the ability to beat them, but the likes of Jonathan Davis, George North, Lee Halfpenny, Dan Bigger, Reece Webb, not played anywhere remotely as well as they can. Now, they've all got big games in them, but I think it's probably too much to expect that they're all going to find form on the same day.
You didn't even mention Liam Williams. You see, when you list off the names like that, you've almost got a Lions back line in potential.
Well, in potential, yeah. But some of the potential was sort of in the future, in the past. If that's not a contradiction terms, but Faletau is massive. I would certainly not in any way think that the Lions number 8 test jersey is Billy Vunipola's. Faletau is a magnificent player. He's the best player in the position Wales have ever had, including Mervyn Davies. Also, Luke Charteris, I've been banging the drum for him for ages, is also a great player when he's on form. So Wales have a team there to beat England, but providing they're all on form, and it's too much to expect that they will be. And finally, Owen, really, really disappointed with the Welsh front row. With Adam Jones' scrummaging and Gethin Jenkins' brilliance around the field, these guys were really, really poor, non-assertive. Didn't see them in the loose. They didn't dominate in the scrum, and I think that up front Wales are not good enough. So I'm thinking England by possibly 9 or 10.
Yeah,
are they caught between two stools at the moment? The kind of the Gatland way, and then the Howley thinking he wants, feeling the pressure to do something different, but hasn't quite created a style or a game plan that...
I think they are caught between two stools. I mean, I think they're trying to change, but Steve just mentioned the front row. For me, that's... Mm. When you compare where they were sort of 4 years ago when they were winning a Grand Slam to now, I think that is, for me, is the biggest change, despite however you want to play the game always playing. I think that front row, which were so competitive, is the biggest change.
Well, you go and ask Gloucester players about Hibbard. I spoke to... a Gloucester player who's played over 300 games on Lucid for Gloucester. I'm not naming him, but you probably guess. But he's just full of admiration for Hibbard, and it's ridiculous he's not that he was kicked out. He can do everything. Also, I'm afraid that Wales have been conned by basically the rest of the world. This Gatland Warren ball stuff. People, it was as if Warren was Wales were the only team playing in that style. Apart from the All Blacks, everybody else was playing exactly the same style. And this Warren ball thing, it was almost like, you know, they were playing old-fashioned rugby, which they weren't. And they've caught between two styles when they never had to be. In a rugby match, what you do is you look at the opposition, the weather, the climate, the state of the game, and you play whatever rugby is going to get you over the line. And, you know, Wales have got intuitive, natural talent in the team. So you just take what it comes. You don't say, right, boys, it's Saturday. We'll do Warren ball today and we'll do Howley ball next week. It's rubbish. And Warren got so much stick for that, which he didn't deserve. It's just the way everybody else played.
Well, no one asked Jamie Roberts, did they? I mean, I think he worked out his best team and the game was constructed around them.
But look,
Jamie's not the dominant force that he was 4 years ago either.
No, he's not. He's not. And Jamie's well down in his game. I'm sure he knows that. You know, I think that all the clashing stuff in his career and life are coming together now. But it's still, rather than... It's the 12 going up the middle, it's still the easiest way to make fast ball out of slow ball that there is. It's better than going around the corner 47 times in mini rucks.
Yeah, Eddie Jones is still desperate to find a 12 to do that. The whole Ben Teo thing.
It's almost like, do you remember, anyone remember Charles Kent donkeys years ago? If you take it up the middle, get over the gain line, your team knows what's going to happen, so he's not going to be sealed off. Then off you go. Easy.
How different would England be now if Manu had been fit for the last 2 years? Because he was the man, Eddie Jones, when he got the job, wanted at inside centre. So England wouldn't have the forward-foul combination, having played the last 18 months. They'd have had Manu Tuilagi there.
That's a very, very good question. And, you know, I don't think they would be where they are now, because I still don't think no one's ever sorted out what to do with Manu. I think they're better off as they were. But having said that about a crash up the middle, but just get one guy over the gain line and off you go.
Final game, obviously, it's a wonderful game as well, France-Scotland on the Sunday. Arguably, France could feel emboldened by their performance on Saturday. They brought the contest to within 3 points. They competed, and I think they will also know there's a game they could have won. There's a couple of passes that short of a second try, and conversely, Scotland do win, and their confidence will be massively up as well. I find that the sort of the hardest one to call of the three.
It's a tough one to call, but I think as a neutral spectator, it's one of the most exciting because Scotland are a team, a resurgent team with so many players that you want to see. Can they keep fulfilling? You know, they're doing it with Glasgow, who are doing great things in Europe. Scotland had a wonderful start, and they've got players who you want to tune in next weekend to see. Can Finn Russell do it again? Can Xander Fagerson do it against the big French front row? Can Dunbar and Jones do it against the French midfield?
Stuart Hogg tackle as well as he can run? I mean, that's the French will test him on that.
Yeah, they will, and I think it's a tough one to call, but it's a really exciting game, that one.
Just fabulous. And what's so nice for Sunday newspaper men is we can just sit in our front rooms and and watch it. I think it's fantastic. I think the inclination is to say France will win it, but in the mental makeup of it, it's a heck of a different thing going to Twickenham saying, right, we're underdogs, boys, we're going to give it to the English and we're going to see how we go, we're going to just batter. Then suddenly you're at home and you've got to win to save your season. If France lose that, then they've lost two. So very, very tight. I do fancy France, but, you know, if Scotland can kick on, they're definitely, definitely not out of it.
Alex, thanks very much. Steve, thanks very much.
Pleasure.
We nailed that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I thought I did.